Hi, it's Ruth McCauley returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, February 11th. We begin with some of the obituary notices appearing in the Decatur Herald and Review. Richard E. Brelsford, 71, of Maroa, passed away Tuesday morning, February 9th, at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. Funeral services to celebrate the life of Richard E. Brelsford will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, February 15th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, February 14th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorial donations may be directed to an organization of the donor's choice. Tammy Lachelle Bond Allen, 32, of Moline Acres in Missouri, formerly of Decatur, passed away on Friday, February 5th. Services celebrating her life will be held at noon on Saturday, February 13th, at the Main Street Church, 2000 North Main Street, with the Reverend Alvin Lee Bond, Sr. officiating. Visitation will take place 1 hour before that service, and burial is scheduled to take place at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service in Decatur. Beverly June Miller, 81, of Decatur, passed away at 9:48 p.m. on Monday, February 8th, at Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Care in Mount Zion, Illinois. The family will receive friends during a memorial visitation from 11 a.m. until noon on Friday, that's tomorrow, February 12th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. Interment will be in Mount Gilead Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family in care of the Dawson Wyckoff Funeral Home. Wendell Winings, 85, of Decatur, on January 29th, followed by his devoted wife, Wanda Winings, 87, of Decatur, on February 8th, went to be with their Lord and Savior, both surrounded by their loving family. Services to celebrate both Wendell's and Wanda's lives will be held at noon on Saturday, February 13th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation beginning at 10 a.m. until the service time. Memorial donations may be made to Faith Baptist Church, the Alzheimer's Foundation, or to the Cancer Care Specialist of Central Illinois Charitable Fund. Richard Lockwood, 87, of Moquegua, passed away on Wednesday, February 10th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A graveside service to celebrate his life will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, February 13th, at Westside Cemetery in Moquegua. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, that's tomorrow, February 12th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Macon. Memorial donations may be made to Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois. I am going to read through the list of funerals that were scheduled for today. I understand they may have already occurred by the time you hear this radio program, but you still might like to be informed. Patricia Ann Gender, 81, of Olney, formerly of Latham, was scheduled to have a service at 4 p.m. at Kistler Patterson Funeral Home in Olney. Alexander C. Navi, and that's G-N-A-V-I, 95, of Decatur, noon at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home. Margaret A. Hammond, 69, of Shelbyville, was at 10 a.m. at the Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Shelbyville. Onorma Pearl Harris, 89, of Newton, was scheduled at 11 a.m. in Crane Funeral Home in Newton. Amos E. Johnson, 83, of Nokomis, 10:30 this morning at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Nokomis. Randy E. Sarver, 60, of Vandalia, at 11 a.m. at the Miller Funeral Home in Ramsey. Sharon Louise Smart, 75, of Decatur, 11 a.m. at the Mount Gilead Cemetery. Billie Jean Sunderland, 79, of Hearst, Texas, formerly of Moroa, was scheduled for 2 p.m. at Bonnet Hill Funeral Home in Colleyville, Texas. Kevin G. Thompson, 43, of Pena, 6 p.m. tonight in the McCracken Dean Funeral Home in Pena. And Bertie Leslie Turnbow, 86, of Deer River, Minnesota, formerly of Sullivan, was scheduled for this afternoon at 1:30 p.m. in the McMullen Young Funeral Home in Sullivan. Services have not yet been scheduled for the following folks, and this is the funerals that are pending. Dorothy E. Holland, 94, of McLean, who died on Wednesday. Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton is in charge of the arrangements. Francis Hooper, 66, of Assumption, who died on Tuesday, February 9th. The site's funeral home in Assumption. Earl Lugden, 85, of Decatur, who died on Tuesday, February 9th. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. And Joyce Ann Strater, 74, of Decatur, who died on Monday, February 8th. Tanzia Slocum Funeral Service and Care is in charge of those arrangements. We turn now to the opinion page of the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up the editorial for today. Richland pick for interim leader wise. Richland Community College has ensured it will be well administered after President Gail Saunders retires at the end of the month. The College Board has decided to name Chuck Novak to be the college's interim president. Novak is familiar with Richland. Saunders replaced him when he retired in 2001. Board Chairman Bruce Campbell said the search for Saunders' permanent replacement will continue while Novak fills the role on an interim basis. He has a great appreciation for Richland, Campbell said. He is well known in the community and it's a natural fit. The college is well positioned to make a transition. Saunders has left the college on firm ground. During her tenure, the college has been known for a lot of things, but perhaps the most significant is how quickly it responds to the needs of the community. All higher education institutions in Illinois face an uncertain future, primarily because of the state's financial problems. But Richland is in better shape than most. Novak, 73, should be adept at working through the financial issues. Most recently, he has been working with the city of DuQuoin as a special project consultant after starting last spring as interim financial director. Once a permanent financial director was named, DuQuoin Mayor Guy Alonghi said his duties were expanded. Novak calls DuQuoin home, but he said he is excited to return to Decatur for the interim position. Novak has dealt with the fallout from the state's budget issues while working with DuQuoin and is well respected in both financial and educational circles in the state. Meanwhile, Saunders is winding down a successful 15 years at the helm of Richland. Her last official day will be February 29th, with her last board meeting to be held Tuesday. Saunders has been a valued leader both off and on the college campus. She has indicated she will remain connected to the Decatur area. Campbell said details of the search process are being finalized and no deadlines have been established. The board is being assisted with the national search process by the Association of College Community College Trustees. Whilst Saunders' leadership will undoubtedly be missed, the community should rest easy that the board is working diligently on a national search to find a worthy replacement. In the meantime, it seems clear that the board has found an interim president that will be able to keep the search process, maintain the momentum that Richland has established, and deal well with the financial issues facing all community colleges in the state. And that was the opinions of the editors of the Decatur Herald and Review. And now we have a letter to the editor with his opinion. Writes Stuart Wade of Bethany, need leader to care about all Americans. Lately, I've heard a lot of talk about Bernie Sanders being a socialist and how he would not be able to pay for single-payer health care. Well, excuse me, but this is what the people told Barack Obama when he was running for president in 2008. They wanted a single-payer health system. The reason he did not get it was because the supposed Democrats in Washington, D.C. would not agree. The Democrats are again saying no on Sanders' plan. Not only are they shunning Sanders, but they are backing a wolf in sheep's clothing, Hillary Clinton. She is in the pocket of the same Wall Street thugs that ruined our economy. Clinton, like her husband, is the most conservative Democrats who have ever been in Washington. For those who say they oppose socialism, if run correctly, it's not much different from capitalism. Ooh. But the problem with the capitalist system we have now is that it is run by the corporate thugs of Wall Street. We have a chance in 2016 to change America and make it great among the industrialized nations of the world. We have a chance to show nations of the world America really does care for their own, and we know they will treat us the same. But if we don't get someone like Bernie Sanders in the White House, someone who can't be bought, it will be business as usual for America. I have been a lifelong Democrat, but I am happy to say I am a socialist who cares about everyone, not only in America, but around the world. My suggestion is revisit what the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have done in the past, and then make the decision on who you want in the White House. A letter to the editor, signed by Stuart Wade of Bethany. Returning back to the Decatur Tribune Online for Paul Osborne's City Beat column, Why Was the Decatur Police Chief Fired? The headline in this column is the question that citizens have been asking each other since the news broke last Thursday that Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney had been fired. I was as shocked as anyone else in the community when I received the short news release from City Manager Tim Gleason stating the chief had been fired. Here's the complete text of the city manager's release. Effective February 4th, 2016, the employment of Brad Sweeney as an employee of the City of Decatur is terminated. This is a personnel matter and there will be no additional comment. Deputy Police Chief James Getz has been appointed interim police chief for the City of Decatur. End quote. That's the whole thing. Sweeney had been with the department since 1995 and was appointed police chief a little over a year ago, in January 2015. It is certainly human nature for everyone to want answers as to why this happened, as the police chief is a highly public figure in the community. However, he is not an elected official. Sweeney was appointed by former city manager Ryan McGrady, and it is the city manager's call to make. And under our form of government, the mayor and city council do not have a role in this process and do not vote on such appointments. The police chief reports to the city manager and not the council. The city manager is his boss, as is every other employee of the city. Essentially, the only employee the mayor and city council have control over is the city manager. If a majority of the members of the city council want to hire, fire, or retire a city manager, they have the power to do so. But they don't have any power to hire, fire, or retire any other city employee, including the police chief. The only power city council could indirectly have on employees would be in budget cuts that would impact the number of employees the city could afford, but the resulting cuts would be made by the city manager. Since news of the firing of Sweeney last week, the mayor and most of the city council members have not commented on it, and that's a wise decision. A few council members may believe the city council will be involved in the search for a new police chief. Actually, the city council should not be involved for the reasons I gave earlier in this very column, that action does not come under the responsibility of the council members. Under the old form of government that Decatur had over a half century ago, council members attempted to get friends and relatives into such jobs. The council manager form of government, which we have now, stopped that practice, and government is better for it. As far as I know, there isn't any law enforcement agency that has an active investigation going on concerning Sweeney at the present time, so it is reasonable to believe the former police chief's termination was not the result of any criminal actions on his part. That's where it stands as I write this column. Facebook, the modern over-the-back-fence irresponsible gossip and rumor mill on city issues that many rely on for the truth, of course, had many posts from people who knew all the reasons that Sweeney was fired. The fact is, the city of Decatur will not make an official statement on the details of the reason for the firing because it's a personnel matter, and the city could be held legally liable for any public comments about a personnel matter. For those who believe that a Freedom of Information Act request to see Sweeney's personnel file would be a great way to find out about what happened, personnel files are exempt from FOIA requests. The only exception would be if information which is not exempt from disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act is placed in an employee's personnel file to hide it from the public. What Sweeney did to merit termination from his boss, if it is not criminal conduct, I would surmise it was an act of insubordination or a serious lack of judgment on something the city manager felt could not be tolerated in the department. Although some bits and pieces of accurate information are bound to leak out in this size of community, there will be no official confirmation or rejection of that information. It's a personnel matter subject to privacy laws upheld by the courts. Over the many years that I've been publisher of this newspaper, I've always been well acquainted with each Decatur police chief before he was appointed, except for John Race, who was brought in from outside the community, and Brad Sweeney. When his name was announced as the new police chief last year, I really didn't know much about him, but he was someone who had served the department for 20 years and had rendered a lot of service to the community. We shouldn't forget that, and started some innovative programs while at the helm. I am saddened by what's happened to his career and the awful impact his firing must be having on his family and friends. My prayers are with all of them, the department, with interim police chief James Getz, and our city. I have the highest respect for the Decatur Police Department. God bless and protect all who serve in our law enforcement agencies. Well, that was a good column in my opinion and this person's opinion. We're turning back now to the Decatur Herald and Review and picking up some of the various life interest articles. This one, I'm just curious, is out of Sacramento, California, written by a Tribune News Service writer, Claudia Buck. Cracking knuckles, is it bad? What makes that sound? Snap, crackle, pop. If you're a knuckle cracker, that familiar sound when you consciously pop your joints is like comfort food. You know it might not be so healthy for your hands or ankles, but it feels oh so good. Robert G. Cook knows that feeling. The 55-year-old Sacramentan said he's been popping his knuckles daily for decades. Typically, it's when he first sits down to work at his computer keyboard. It's like a concert pianist or baseball player warming up, he said. It's a ritual. And like many habitual knuckle crackers, he's always been told that it's bad for his joints, leading to arthritis or enlarged knuckles. That's why Cook jumped at the chance to be one of 40 volunteers in a recent study by UC Davis radiology professor Dr. Robert Bouton and orthopedic surgery professor Dr. Robert Szabo, who also sees patients clinically. The pair wanted to resolve two persistent questions about knuckle cracking. What causes the popping sound, and is it bad for your joints? Patients do come in all the time and want to know if knuckle cracking is bad for their joints, Bouton said. It's a real-world question that a lot of patients ask. Although popping knuckles is arguably the most common kind of joint cracking, it can also occur in the ankles, knees, back, or neck. Some say it's a way to release tension or limber up. For others, it's simply a habit. Bouton said the study's inspiration came from an unexpected source. His 11-year-old daughter, who noticed classmates at school, mainly boys, loudly cracking their knuckles. Her curiosity prompted Bouton to craft the study. The 40 participants included 30 with a history of habitual knuckle cracking and 10 without. Some said they had never intentionally cracked their knuckles. Others were habitual, cracking them up to 20 times a day for the past 40 years. Ranging in age from 18 to 63, the volunteers were invited to sit and methodically crack their knuckles. Techniques varied. Some pulled their fingers, others flexed or bent them back. To determine what causes the crackle and pop, a tiny ultrasound device was hovered over their joints, capturing the sound effects of knuckles being cracked. More than 400 ultrasound images were taken. The results were startling. It looked like a tiny 4th of July explosion inside the hand, said Bouton, who presented his study last month at the Radiological Society of North America in Chicago. That flash, he explained, is caused by dissolved gas that sits in joint fluid. When you pull or bend a joint, it creates negative pressure, which releases the gas, forming tiny microbubbles. When the released quickly, i.e. knuckle cracking, when released quickly, i.e. in knuckle cracking, the escaping gas causes a bright flash that shows up in imaging. It has a distinctive appearance on an ultrasound. Every single case, we heard the crack before we saw the physical flash. The UC Davis findings appear to contradict traditional explanations that the knuckle cracking sound is caused when the gas bubbles burst, like a balloon being popped. Last April, a study by Canadian researchers, okay, this is my aside, who knew there were so many people really investigating knuckle cracking? Okay, but Canadian researchers using MRI imaging came to a similar conclusion. The knuckle cracking sound is created by the bubble's formation itself. Until that joint fluid pressure builds up again, it can take up to 20 minutes before someone can re-crack their knuckles. In an email, study co-author Szabo, chief of the UC Davis Hand, Upper Extremity, and Microvascular Surgery Department, said, What are gratifying about our results are the questions raised about bubbles in human systems, particularly in joints. We were able to actually visualize the bubbles and correlate them with the sounds of cracking, supporting the theory of cavitation, or the formation of a void or bubble inside liquid. The formation of bubbles, he said, quote, is somewhat mysterious and still not fully understood, but we got to see it in action in the joints of live people. That was exciting, end quote. The second part of the UC Davis study was to assess the potential harm from knuckle cracking. Each participant was tested before and after each ultrasound by two-hand wrist orthopedic surgeons who checked for range of motion, grip strength, and laxity or overextension of ligaments. The surgeons examined the hands without knowing who was or wasn't a knuckle cracker and were not told which joints had successfully been cracked. The physical examinations by the hand injury specialists found no problems in the joints of knuckle crackers. We did not find any swelling or adverse results like decreased grip strength, said Bhutan. His conclusion: there's no short-term harm in knuckle cracking, and there might even be a benefit. After a joint was cracked, it showed a significantly increased range of motion compared to joints that had not been cracked, Bhutan said. The UC Davis study appears to contradict a 1990 study that suggested knuckle cracking can cause joint swelling and weaken the grip and, quote, should be discouraged. Given the prevalence of knuckle crackers, it's estimated that 25% or more people do so. Scholars have paid attention to the topic in recent years. Most studies have debunked the warnings that knuckle cracking causes arthritis in joints. The next step for the UC Davis research is to look at long-term effects of joint cracking on other areas besides hands. Bhutan is in the midst of analyzing results from a global questionnaire of 1,800 individuals to determine if there are age, cultural, or geographic differences among knuckle crackers. Despite all the research, Bhutan knows that some things don't change about knuckle cracking. Many people are really quite fond of knuckle cracking and find it hard to imagine life without its existence, he said. And for others, it's like fingernails on a blackboard.